And welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Manar Azraq. Did I say that okay?
Yes, Zrake it is. Thank you so much for having me both. I appreciate that.
We're looking forward to it. So we met Manar last year at Sonoma County's Holocaust Remembrance Day. She was standing there looking strong and powerful person. And I had no other choice but to walk up to her, and she walked up to me. It's kind of like we looked at each other and we just said, oh, she'll be an interesting person to meet or whatever, right?
Right. That's right.
So I learned many things about Manar, but she's Palestinian and she grew up in Israel. And she's a spiritual leader. She wears many hats. She's a sound healer. She's a group facilitator, director, founder, so many hats. And we will be talking about those. And she also sings beautifully. And you will be able to hear her sing a couple times tonight, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. We're really excited to have you on the show, Manar, and get to know you better. So how she founded her nonprofit organization, Transformation by Fire, which is very timely to talk about that tonight. We're like a year anniversary of the fires. So we really want to hear about that tonight. And how she's living now in Sebastopol at the Sonoma Horticultural Nursery. And like Diana said, later she will be chanting for us, which I'm very excited about. But before we get to Manar, as usual, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer tonight, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of October 7th, 2018. According to the Mexican news outlet Informador, police in popular gay vacation spot Puerto Vallarta are baffled why someone is tying naked men to lamp poles in the city and spanking them so hard it leaves bruises on their butts. The letter R has also been shaved into the back of each man's head. 10 men have been found tied to posts around the city, most within minutes of each other, on two different nights. Authorities suspect the R stands for rat, a common term to describe thieves and local vandals, but they say it could be a conflict between rival gangs. None of the badly beaten men will admit why they have been publicly humiliated, and many have said they were abducted from their homes, but claim they have no idea why. And here in the U.S., the Trump administration has started denying visas to the partners of same-sex diplomats unless they are married. Most of the countries involved do have marriage equality, but the policy will apply even if same-sex marriages are illegal in the diplomat's home country. Couples will be required to get married by the end of the year, or the diplomat's partner will be deported. The restriction applies to both diplomats and United Nations employees. The United States issues diplomatic visas for the spouses of U.S. diplomats. While couples have until January 1st to get married and could do so in the United States, they could be arrested and prosecuted when they return home if homosexuality is illegal there. And here in California, Governor Jerry Brown signed into law Assembly Bill 2504, which adds to the California Penal Code a requirement that all law enforcement officers and 911 dispatchers receive LGBT awareness training. The law specifies that this training must include the differences in sexual orientation and gender identity, the terms people use to describe their identity, ways to create an inclusive workplace for LGBT employees, LGBT history, and how law enforcement can more effectively respond to hate crimes and domestic violence involving LGBT victims. California's Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training will be adding this new curriculum to basic academy programs throughout the state in the coming months. A course of training is already available from the Police Academy at Napa Valley College, and the Albany Police Department in the Bay Area was the first department to step up and pilot the online delivery of this course. The Napa Academy has been providing this training to new recruits for more than 5 years. And here locally, don't forget, the 2018 Outwatch Film Festival starts this week on Friday with the opening night film Mapplethorpe beginning at 7:30 p.m. Films continue on Saturday and Sunday, all showing at the Rialto Cinemas in Sebastopol. A weekend pass is available for $70. Individual film tickets are $12, and you can get all the details at outwatchfilmfest.org. For a calendar of LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all the LGBT news headlines we're following, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diane and Sheridan. And in studio, we have Manar Esrek. Yay.
Yes.
And Manar told us during the break that, during the news break, that her last name means blue. And she's going to tell us all about that in a minute. Anyway, she's the founder and director of Transformation by Fire. And like we were saying right before the news, when we were introducing Manar, this is, tomorrow is the year anniversary of the Sonoma County Fire. So she has this great nonprofit called Transformation by Fire.
Wonderful, yeah. So why don't you tell us, Manar, about Transformation by Fire, but I know Shira just alluded to you telling us about your last name meaning blue, so maybe you want to get that done and share the blue part, and then you can go into Transformation by Fire. How about that?
Thank you, yes. Interesting, the color blue. Thank you so much, both of you, for having me this evening. I am honored to be here and to share my voice in so many ways. So as I was listening to her translation, it is blue in Arabic. The meaning of Manar is beacon of light, and Azraq means blue. But I was listening, Azraq in Hebrew, the rake means, just the word rake means empty. And I often like to think about, you know, how I move in this world. I move with from that consciousness, from that understanding that I can wear all kinds of identities, like just I'm wearing my outfit today or any outfit, you know, tomorrow. I can wear them and empty myself in internal emptiness, not just external, of course. But I love my family, Zreik. It's a very unique people, and blue it is. It's the color of healing, mm-hmm. and so many, you know, other meanings that the blue can, you know, bring to us. So I'm so grateful to be here again, and I'm ready for your questions, my dear.
So, great, thank you for that. So sure. Continue with the Transformation by Fire and how that came about. And
our mission is to support survivors of the fires in healing invisible wounds of loss and trauma. As we know, as we all know, like we all have times in our lives that we are affected by loss, all kinds of losses and many traumas from, you know, all kinds of traumas again from childhood on. And we experience the last 3 years. I used to live in Middletown, Lake County, and a lot of fires around us mm-hmm. every year, a lot of loss, a lot of trauma. People don't know what to do with the overwhelming experiences that the fire, you know, the wildfires, they just come and you don't know what's going to happen next. And many of us, you know, we run for our lives. And that's what I did. 2015, September 12 on Saturday. When the Valley Fire came, I escaped on a little scooter that I had, you know, driving just I had in my possessions at the time. And it was scary to be in this place of the unknown and fear what's going to happen. A moment where it was unrealistic that we have had so many trees and homes burning at the same time, and it was surreal. It was really not from this world. And yet there is that safety that you're looking to secure yourself, first of all, your lives and your loved ones, and of course your people, animals, and then everyone has a different story to share with us about how they left everything and just found out that life is the most important and precious thing that you can. That's like really to reshift your focus on life and that you treasure relationships and you move from wanting and needing into how can I help? Mm. How can I be of service?
Mm. Beautiful, beautiful. And so, yeah, take a moment for that. That was beautiful. And so with that, you decided that the service of Transformation by Fire would be beneficial for people and yourself.
So the way the story goes, I started to offer healing events before the Valley Fire of 2015. And I had a vision to bring people together and celebrate life through music and dance and laughter and food. And that's back to my family. That's how my family does it. Especially the Palestinian people and the Jews. I believe when they come together for a wedding or any holiday, any event, they like to listen to music and dance and celebrate with a lot of joy in their heart. And that is expressed in many different ways. So I wanted to bring like-minded people and to awaken people in that journey of coming together for a longer time, not just for 2 hours of coffee, but maybe perhaps a whole week. Just be in the medicine, so to speak, be in each other's energy and presence and share our gifts. And so I started crafting, at the Four Springs Retreat Center in Middletown, Lake County, I started bringing people together, healers, counselors, shamans, musicians, and they all said yes. They all said, yes, we're with you on this journey. Let's do it. So I booked a weekend to start to initiate. The project was called Living as Awakened Being. Living as Awakened Beings is intentionally was supposed to start November 6th, 7th, and 8th in 2015. So Coyle and James, my previous business partner, she said yes. Everybody moved forward. And the day before the Valley Fire, we were just ordering 1,000 postcards. We designed a postcard to invite people to this event. And the fire just came and surprised us all. And there are moments that when I smell the smoke in the air, like last year, I was living in Hidden Valley Lake, which is an hour up drive up the mountain towards Lake County, and it's just sometimes it's just hard for me to think that we're gonna survive with all these wildfires coming, and we're not prepared for what's gonna happen next. So intentionally, we created groups, intimate groups of people to come together and dive by listening. Listening to what is the most, what is the need? What is the need of the hour? And that's how Transformation by Fire came about. That fire came, and Sequoia and I looked at each other, and we said, what just happened? 2,000 residential structures just burned. 4 people died in our communities from we couldn't reach to them. And again, that was in 2015, but the scenario continues every summer. It's like, am I going to survive this? Where am I going to be when the next fire takes its own I guess, path of showing us, you know, I'm here, I'm taking, like, it's burning the whole everything. And so we looked at each other, I'm back to Sequoia, and we said, you know, this is, we were shocked at first. And then she said, this is a transformation by trial. As soon as she said that, I said, that's it. That's what we're going to call it now. Not living as awakened beings. We're going to listen to the need of the hour and just moved it. I mean, we changed the name right there to Transformation by Fire. We named it. We called it what it is. And so it's, we offer healing services, recovery services for people, individuals, families, and communities to heal and recover as they rebuild and reconnect and make new lives. You know, we're all affected by these fires, and some of us more than others.
And you have weekly, you have Transformation by Fire events, correct?
That's right.
And I think it'd be important to say at this time, you know, how people can get in touch with you, and you're starting to say, like, what some of the things that you do in that day-long event.
Yes. We designed a day-long healing event that is offered to the community by donations. People come at 10 a.m. and they journey with us until 5 p.m. And we have extended our outreach to include monthly programs in Santa Rosa and Sebastopol. And our next event will be this coming actually, next week on Sunday, October 21st, at Bethany, Congregation Bethany in Santa Rosa, and Saturday, October 27th, in Sebastopol at Sonoma Horticultural Nursery. That's the house I live in. It's being converted to potentially a healing center, and right now we're, you know, working on this project to start. Many workshops, offering different workshops in that Sonoma Horticultural Nursery has a lot to offer to people. And so we will be offering different classes, you know, around horticultural, botany, and ecology, and to return back to Earth. I think that's what the fire is also telling us, because the state of the nature is telling us what we are. It's a reflection. It's a The state of nature is our inner state. That's how I like to think of it. So we are far away with all this technology and what we do and the choices that we, you know, the lifestyle we're living and the choices that we make to maintain this lifestyle. We're far away from nature. And as a Waldorf teacher, and that's my education background, I know, and I have made that shift early on in Jerusalem, where I'm from. During my Waldorf teaching training for 4 years, I really shed off, took all these society should and could and would do into coming back to simplicity and to the heart and to the most basic fundamental thing that we need. We need each other. And we need each other. And yeah. Connections and strengthening that relationship with nature and connection with oneself and connection with one another.
Yeah.
And community and, you know, at all levels.
It's a beautiful place where you live and what you're creating at Sonoma Horticultural Nursery.
Thank you.
We didn't even know it was existed, that it was back there. And it's beautiful and so green and lush in Sebastopol, right around the, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes from us. You know, it's a beautiful place. They have many beautiful plants, a whole new line of edible plants, too. I mean, it's just a lot. Fruit trees. It's just a lot of beauty there, and the pond and walking.
Yeah,
thank you so much. You took me on a beautiful walk there.
Yeah, and Mike Boss, the new owner, his intention is to bring people back to Mother Earth and grow their own garden and, you know, live life from a kind of like being self-sustaining life. So the journey is coming back to your oneself and coming back to Mother Earth, and we offer different workshops and classes to do so. So that's how unique this place is and how unique the people who are holding this vision, are. So I'm very grateful to be part of the team who are doing this work.
How unique and wonderful you are. And I think this might be a great opportunity, a good place for you to, offer something up, a blessing or some chant, something for the people who are listening who've gone through a fire or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I think it'd be special.
Well, thank you. I would love to sing. One thing I want to just link my intention is when I hold space for healing, I want to say that we touch the water within. That's important to heal the wounded fire within us. So the more deep you go into that well, the fountain of water, and that's these programs are designed to give you the time to go deeper into what, and just clear that energetical dust. And energetically, we offer a lot of letting go and rituals to clear the dust so you can have a clear vision of your for your life. And so I like to think of it, we heal people from the inside out. And this song is also about, it's a chant song. And let's see, I have a drum here too. Let's see if I can hold the drum and sing at the same time. Can you hear me? Okay. El Adon, El Adon, El a Hebrew chant for the one, the highest, that rules everything, if you wish to believe in that. Mm-hmm. But is that one consciousness that we're all in, we're all part of, we're all connected, interconnected deeply in this, part of the fabric of this universe. And I'm calling in that one whatever that means to you.
Yeah, thank you.
You out there, to you here in the studio.
Yeah, thank you.
And it can change each time. It doesn't have to be one thing or one, you know.
Mm-hmm. Your voice is beautiful, really moving. Thank you. I love that smile. She's all shy. We get to the laughter, y'all, because she is a great laugher too.
Thank you.
So, anyways.
So, yeah. This is basically the sacred voice. It lives in every single one of us. And again, back to the healing events and musical events that I do, is invoking that, is sharing that sacred chanting in Sanskrit, in Arabic, Hebrew, different, you know, Aramaic and English, and all kinds of, you know, in different rhythms, so we can live momentarily, go back and revisit that sacred place within us, so we can draw love and light and wisdom from that place, you know, the inner water again, back to the inner water, our emotions.
Nice. So you speak three languages, don't you?
Mazboot. Huh. That's Arabic first. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Explain.
I said, that's right. Mazboot. Okay.
And to be clear what they are?
Arabic, Hebrew, and English.
Uh-huh. Wow.
A little bit of English.
A little bit, just a little bit, right? Yeah. So, I think we should go and move into the next song, because after the song that you're going to share about, we want to talk about your life and how it was for you to be living abroad, you know, in Israel, and being Palestinian, and your family, and how you identify. So we have a lot to talk about. So why don't you describe this next song that we're going to be playing? Not next song, the song that we're going to be playing.
You mean?
Yeah, Bob.
The one that I chose?
Chose,
oh, okay. Bob Marley. Well, Bob Marley is one of my favorite singers ever. I think he's a mover, shaker. And like every time I hear his voice and his songs, something within me knows it's okay. He touched that water and it's okay. So something about his music really touched me. It just is touching me deep, and I love reggae. It just moves my whole body again, and I think healing comes from that inner movement, you know, touching the inner. And Bob Marley and I share something very unique. I love him so much that I was born on his birthday. So
okay,
I'm so, you know.
So let's hear it.
Yes, February 6th. Thank you.
just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and we have Manar Esrek in studio with us today, or this evening, and then we were just listening to Bob Marley singing one of those beautiful, famous songs that Manar brought, because she loves Bob Marley, and they share the same birthday. We just learned February 6th, which is in about 4 months, so... So it's been so interesting listening to you, Manar, and what a beautiful voice you have, just like Diana said. I am curious about your childhood and your upbringing in Israel
as a Palestinian.
You can say Palestinian, yeah. That's rare these days to hear about that and to have someone in our presence that we could really, you know, touch and be touched by. So I was wondering if you could give us a little snippet of your life as a youth.
As a youth. Well, 20% of the Israelis are actually not Jewish. They're native to the land. They're Arab Palestinians, native to the land of what we call today Israel. And another way to describe this Arab-Israeli minority group. I come from a Christian Palestinian. That group was a double minority, because you have the majority of the Arab world is Muslims. That's true for the Palestinian people. And then I am Christian. I'm not a Muslim. I grew up in a Christian family. However, I never really grew up in church, but they celebrated Christmas and Easter. So it wasn't spiritual. It wasn't coming from that religious. I wasn't, no. So my upbringing was actually very, when I reached that youth age, I was already rocking. Like, I was on the judo mat kicking ass. Excuse my language.
Judo.
Yeah, I did judo. I'm a black belt national Israeli judo champion. And I was holding the title for 7 consecutive years as a gold medalist in Israel, which was a rare scene, because I'm, again, from that minority group coming to the national judo team, women team, and I'm like the champion. So for that, in that sense, I was, all my struggles in my upbringing, I channeled on the judo mat, and I... basically performed with my body and a discipline. Like, it takes a lot of discipline to be a champion in any kind, right? Mm-hmm. Or an athlete, you know.
Yeah.
Diana.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes a lot of discipline and sweat. Mm-hmm. And so I had judo basically saved my life in that. So I was 12 years old when I became the gold medalist.
All
the way.
At 12?
At 12. Wow. The first Israeli, yeah. And then I held that until I was 19, basically after graduated high school.
How did it save your life? Talk about that.
Because I faced a lot of challenges. I didn't know how to... relate to myself, in a sense of, as soon as I woke up around 7 or 8 of age, I realized that a lot of things. I realized that, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, to start with, you know, the language. I spoke Arabic at home and Hebrew outside. So you can, maybe a lot of Mexican, they experience that. They speak one language at home, and maybe, you know, the outer, it's English. So that was already kind of like a separation, because language is not just a way to communicate. Language, it's a way to learn about the culture and the identity and the history of the people who are speaking that particular language. You learn more than just communicating, you know, your desires or needs or whatever that is, but you learn who they are and where they come from and what kind of heritage they're holding and they're inheriting from their ancestors. So I already felt that gap. I'm speaking Hebrew. You know, and that's true about my parents. They spoke Hebrew outside of the house, and inside, they only spoke Arabic with us. So that's one of the things. And then the national split. It was like, I'm Palestinian, an enemy to Israel, to the country. On that label identity, you know, they labeled me, you're Palestinian, Israeli. So I'm an Israeli citizen, however, I'm Palestinian, and I'm not Muslim, and then it's like so many, and I'm not even religious. So every time I turned, it was like, what I'm not. And so everyone tried to pull me into their court. I was like, I don't fit here. And the major, I feel, complexity crisis that I lived personally with, I was born with an identical twin sister. Her name is Reem. And she mirrored to me every day of my life. What am I supposed to be? That's how I felt. I'm supposed to be this modern woman, Arab woman. And everything inside of me said, you're not that. You are something else. You're not. It didn't resonate with me. And so I was struggling with that too. Every time I turned, even whether I spoke, tried to share my, you know, my life or my sexuality, it was like wrong. It was the wrong way. And so Judah saved my life. In many ways, I channeled a lot of these struggles and conflicts on the Judah mat to demonstrate, you know, power, if you wish, because being competitive, you have to have that power, the will to perform and the will to win. And it takes a lot of discipline and commitment and energy to put into this, and reach the goal. So it saved my life because it made me more connected, grounded, more connected to the present moment, you know, honor, but I was needing a lot of answers to all these questions that I was struggling with. At the time, I wasn't spiritual yet. I was still very, like my family, intellectual, analytic, scientist, academic. It was a big struggle. I'm a person that I only want to sing and open my heart and see the divine within everyone and relate to that unknown and relate to what is not like, you know, in the old countries. It's either the male god. Mm. It's very patriarchy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very much male. They refer to God as male. And so I was not being spiritual in my upbringing, and then God is male. It's like, you know what? Maybe there's something that I'm missing. So I found a way that the only way out, actually, it's within. So I went deep into the heart of things. That's how I discovered my truth, my gender identity. I came up with all my truth and connected to the voice that you just heard.
Mm. Well, at home?
Yeah, I started singing out back home in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And I went deep into my soul, and that's the journey that I'm taking people when they come to me. I like to invite them to discover.
What did you find out about your sexuality that you can share with us?
I actually had to educate myself and educate everybody in my life about what I found, and actually went to court and educated the court here in the immigration court in San Francisco and spoke my truth. What I found is the I feel that making love to a woman for me was like, there's male inside of me, there's a male energy inside of me who's coming alive every time I'm with a woman. And that was like, hey, wait a minute, what is that energy? What is that impulse? What is that, where is it coming from? And it was repressed and oppressed for many, many years. I was hiding that and running away from myself and hiding and lying back home in my old country. I didn't want to face the truth. The conditioning, the conditions of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, a Middle Eastern mindset, did not support an open, you know, sexual or gender orientation to be like, I'm they, I am open to explore, I could be a woman, a man, a none, a both, a nothing. You know, these identities are just like an outfit or a mask, if you wish. They don't define me, but they're part of me. And right. So to express all these parts of me, I had to come out in a place where I consider it very safe. Here in San Francisco Bay Area, I came out to myself, you know.
So you weren't out there. You didn't know anybody who were...
I did, uh-huh. But women will come to me and they wanted to make love to me, and we did. And then will say to me, you know, we trust you that you're not going to share this. This is like shushu. Mm-hmm. Like you're not, mm-hmm. We trust you, we gave you, you know, our, no, please, like we, and then they will go and date men because that's what they're being expected to do. Mm-hmm. And so do I. I felt the same thing, but then I couldn't lie to myself anymore. What am I doing? Running away from myself and lying, you know, just to please my culture. And there's this expectation from your mother and expectations from the society around you and your family. So
how did you make the move? I mean, what did you say to your family? Well, I mean, how did you?
I actually manifested a lover from San Diego.
Okay, how did you manifest a lover from that?
It, you know, through martial arts, a lot of, the sisterhood, a lot of them black belt like me in Aikido, Judo, you know, we meet, we train, we, you know, we're strong in many ways, and if we're strong, you know, so they helped me to come out and introduce me to this American Jewish woman from San Diego, and we just fell in love, and she brought me here in 2006. And I had a lot to offer to different communities, so we traveled a lot. I shared a lot of my workshops and classes. I offered martial arts for peace at the time, 12 years ago, you know. I was still, my English was rusty, and I could understand, but not really speak. And I was still in the martial arts and stuff like that. So I came with her. And then I heard a voice telling me, this is your new home. Hmm. Kind of like I was connected to spirit, and spirit says, this is it. You gotta take it or leave it. You and going back home. Hmm. And I trusted that voice, and I said, okay, I guess my guidance, one of them, if you're spiritual out there, it's good for you, but if you're not a spiritual spirit guide, could be a woo-woo. Mm-hmm. but I did. I trusted it, and I first revealed my sexual orientation, and then I came with my spiritual orientation, which means I started going to synagogues in the Bay Area, where I felt safe and welcomed and home with the language and the people. You know, we're cousins. In the Middle East, we like to fight, but we are actually cousins. Sometimes we fight. We know that deep, deep inside that we are from the same Abraham, all of us. And so we love each other. And so I'm talking about the Israelis, the Jews, and the Palestinians, the Arab. We're very much alike, and so I found a home in with these people that welcomed me. Mm. I just mentioning about my first rabbi was a transgender female to male, and was born as a Christian woman. Now he's a rabbi, male rabbi. So that was like, All right, welcome home, Manar. Welcome to, the new world. This is a new world. You can define your own way, your own, whatever feels right. And, you know, whatever's true to you, you can be that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to play by should and could and would and whatever that is, you know. in society, there's a lot of that. Even here, mm-hmm. even having a job 9 to 5 is, you know,
yes.
it's a lot of should and must and do this. And
yeah, that get in the way of beauty and free expression. And so I'm curious about your family. So once you made the decision to stay here and this is home, so you've been here, you say, what?
12 years.
12 years. And so what's your connection back home with your parents and
well,
your sister? And
my father died 15 years ago. Sometimes I often think, like, he sacrificed his life to help me from above because I was stuck back home. You know, I didn't know how to go left and right, and I was just living by their terms and not my own. So, and then, he passed on. And then I'm still connected. And I talk to my sister almost every other day or twice a week, or, you know, it depends on the rhythm of the season. And but we talk constantly, and with my mom as well. And I think they're mostly happy. They're happy for me that I have found myself.
Do they know
that I'm not lost?
Your struggles with your identity and
I didn't speak up back home. I was so afraid to talk mm-hmm. about it because mm-hmm. it wasn't not just coming as a lesbian. It wasn't just that. It was coming as who I really am. And as I said, I'm still in that discovery. I mean, I'm educating myself as I go. Mm-hmm. A lot of the lovers here in the United States that I had, women lovers, they helped me reveal, and they feedback back to me and mm-hmm. like, oh, this is what we feel when we're with you. And you, like, you know, they said, you got all confused being raised as a female. You're like very much male to us. Like, you know, okay. But I have both, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm androgynous. I guess that's the word I'm looking for, very much. Mm-hmm. None of it, all of it. Mm-hmm. I get to choose. A lot of fluidity there is in my gender expression and sexuality. And so when I went to court, I spoke about my immigration court in San Francisco. I spoke about me being two-spirit being. So I identified as a male and a female. And the male part of me was not accepted, not so ever. It was actually threatened by a lot of, you know, my old people in my old country. They don't understand for some reason. I'm not sure why. Because a lot of Native cultures I learned here, even Native mm-hmm. American, they honor their true spirit beings. They hold the medicine. They look at them as medicine people. And so something is missing back home when you are dealing with ongoing survival and conflicts, mm. war zone, and just conflicts with, so to speak,
yeah.
what they call an enemy. You miss out the inner discovery, and you're just dealing with the story of who's going to do what to when, and politics interferes. I mean, it's very challenging to be a minority everywhere you go mm-hmm. on this planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, if you are, you know, a native, I reached a point where I felt I'm not home in my home. Like, I felt I better live if I'm not home. Nobody makes you feel at home because you're like the enemy. You're like this. You're like mm-hmm. that. And I was like, maybe I should live somewhere that I'm not home because I'm not, like, nobody,
like,
you know, it's like already,
anyways,
just
yeah.
anyway. So just try that kind of life. Mm-hmm. So I trusted it. Mm-hmm. And that's how I go about. I trust and I have faith mm-hmm. to the unfolding. I show up mm-hmm. with truth and honesty and
so is this
love, a lot of love, so love, self-love and care. Mm-hmm. And that's doing that to myself. I think it was easy for me to birth transformation by fire, healing and recovering from natural disasters because I demonstrated that way before to myself, because, you know, I'm ripped off from my family and my land and my language and culture and everything, the fabric of my, I was born and raised, of my life. And so I felt like, ooh, I'm losing a lot. I'm like misplaced. I'm planted somewhere else. I have to grow roots all over from the beginning, you know, learn the language, learn the culture.
Transformation by fire, yeah, speaks deeply to you personally.
Yes, because it's about how do you redefine yourself, rebalance your life, body, mind, spirit, and, you know, kind of like reclaim your new path, of because everything is being taken away from you. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
In a moment, in a heartbeat, you lost everything to the fire. Mm. And the metaphor is the inner fire.
Right.
Because, you know.
So is there a chant or song? Because I promised the audience that we would do another chant. So, or a song. Something that resonates with what you're talking about finding home and finding yourself. Is there anything that...
Yes. Uh-huh. Actually... there's a song, Egyptian song, that I like to sing, and it's about the heart. And so the heart reveals what's gonna come, what kind of love you're gonna experience next, because it's all love, but what are you ready for to experience? You know, what kind of love from the universe? So love, friendship, love, lovers. So the word it's Elbi. Elbi means heart. Mm. And in the classic Arabic, we say Qalbi. I think Kelev, the radio station here, there's a Kelev. Is there? There's a radio station here, Kelev. I often, when I listen to them, it's about that heart, you know, Qalbi. Mm. So I'll do a little chant about the heart. أنا قلبي أنا
CD. Manor, we have to close our show. It is that time. And so we like to ask our guests for words of wisdom to our listeners, because this show is going to go up on our website and people can listen to it tomorrow, well, let's say next week or next year.
Okay.
So what words of wisdom do you have for anyone who's listening?
Wisdom.
Wisdom, advice, life.
In Hebrew, we say chokhmah. Chokhmah. In Arabic, we say hikm. And hikm means law. So everyone is a universe. Everyone vibrate differently. Trust me on that. I have an identical twin sister. I was growing and raised with her. So I would advise that you listen to the law within yourself. Mm. Trust yourself. Trust your inner guides and God and that universe that you are part of, but you are very unique within your own way. So that's my advice. Mm-hmm. So people can draw from that wisdom of intuitions of who they are with honestly, you know.
It's beautiful. Very beautiful. Thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't want it to end either.
I know. Right?
So I'm coming to your living room to sing a few more songs.
Right on. Okay,
cool.
Can you sing us out a little bit? Just very go like very quietly while I finish our show and we go out. Just real little.
You're so sweet. Thank
very
you,
quiet. Yeah. So remember, like Manar, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diane and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month.
Good night.